Asthma, allergies, autism and ADHD, they're all on the increase. And those most at risk? Well, it's our children. Rates have doubled in recent years. One in three kids in the United States are affected by at least one of these issues. Is it that we're more aware and diagnosing it better? Or is the increase real? If it's real, how might you improve the health of your child? The answers are coming straight up. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Despite increased health funding, the health of our kids seems no better. In fact, it's getting worse. In the 8 years from 1998 to 2006, hospital admissions for allergies rose almost 400%. And look here for more statistics. So let's focus on what makes for healthy babies. And for this discussion, I want to welcome Dr. Debbie Futrell, a paediatric integrative doctor. Practicing in New Zealand, she's a fellow of the Australasian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine and is involved with the Mind Foundation and DAN. And joining us in the studio is Callie Dorfman, a nutritionist and author of the book What's Eating Your Child? Now got a new name, Cure Your Child with Food. Welcome, Dr. Futrell and Callie.
Thank you.
Now, Kelly, how sick is the current generation of children?
I think it's pretty sick. You listed some statistics early on, and I think that the latest one I saw was that over 50% of kids now have some kind of chronic health condition. That's something that will not beyond just asthma and the ADHD you're talking about, something that you're going to have to be monitoring. That's a lot.
That is a lot. That's a lot. One in two. Dr. Futrell, tell us about the trends for autism. What's happening over time?
What we've seen over the last few decades has been quite an astronomical increase in the rate of autism. If you look at the first slide, this is just showing rates from 1985 up to 2002 from a Lancet study, showing a very steep rise relative to other similar disorders of neurodevelopment, with epilepsy, cerebral palsy, etc. So there's something different happening with autism, and you know, the rates during that period increased from 4 in 10,000 children to more than 100 in 10,000 children being affected. But then if we maybe look at more recent stats and move on to the next slide, this is from the USA. This is a recent survey done by the CDC. And even in the last 5.5 years, we've seen staggering increases in the rates of autism. Those bars in the deeper pink are the rates from 2007, and the lighter, taller bars are from the 2011-12 period. Maybe if we just look at for boys aged 6 to 17, during that 5.5-year period, the rate went from around 1.8% of boys being affected to a staggering over 3%. So 3% of boys at school currently have a diagnosis of autism.
That's phenomenal. Now, Callie, you're here in the United States, so you're seeing these children. What are the dietary interventions that you're offering them?
Well, dietary interventions really fall into two categories. The first category is, are you eating something that's bothering you? And there's been several diets that have been looked at for autism in particular, the gluten-free, casein-free diet, and then there are specific carbohydrate or the GAPS diet, which limits starches even further. And we find in some children, when we remove these irritants, they do function better. They're able to interact with their peers more and learn. And then there is the adding nutrients, and there is nutrients you can add to help to encourage learning, because there is a chemistry to learning when you think about it. Everything you do has a chemistry, including learning. And so if you put the chemistry in a good situation, then all the therapy works better.
Mm. Now, Dr. Futrell, I've heard you share about an intervention you had with a boy called Regan. Can you give us a quick picture of what Regan was like when he first came to see you and how he's doing today?
Sure. Regan first came to see me when he was 3, and at that point he was lost in his own world, really didn't interact with family. He would have quite significant tantrums, and he had very little language even though he was 3. He would line up his toys and had unusual sort of rigid behaviours, and so he was very much sort of locked into a pattern of decreased speech, abnormal socialization, and quite unusual behaviors. And, had a diagnosis of autism from the pediatrician.
And how is he today? How old is he now, and what's his functioning like now?
Oh, well, that's a different story. He's 11 now, and he's just moved country, moved schools, and I had an email from his mother just yesterday to say that he's just been voted as a class counselor. He's just had an award for his academic achievement. He's got lots of friends. He's basically a very capable and independent young man. Yes, he's sensitive. We have to take care of his biochemistry, but when that's right, he's indistinguishable from his peers.
That's amazing. Well, before we continue this discussion with our guests, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have a healthy breakfast recipe for you, but first, take a look at today's doctor's orders.
I love eating cultured food.
Cultured food?
Yeah, this is a culture medium in which a large colony of friendly bacteria live. And when I eat them, they go into my tummy and they help me digest my food, assimilate my nutrients, and they boost my immune system.
So is that like blue cheese? I used to work in a restaurant and I made blue cheese dressing about 30 gallons a week. I'd take these big wheels of blue cheese, grind them up, and the smell would permeate the whole restaurant. And the waitresses would come back and complain. I thought you said they were friendly.
Yeah, well, you have to consider the colony that you're eating.
Well, how do you know?
In your case, it's unfriendly.
Well, how do you know the difference?
Well, you think about it. Cheese causes headaches, migraines, irritability, indigestion, and poor sleep.
That sounds pretty unfriendly to me.
Exactly, very unfriendly. And those bacteria are actually not good for your intestinal microflora.
Well, not only that, the cheese is cultured for many months, severely oxidizing the cholesterol.
Right, and oxidized cholesterol is lethal to your arteries. Within 24 hours, you're already starting to develop plaques.
So coming back to friendly bacteria, are you saying that there's a war going on in our gut between the friendly bacteria and the pathogens?
That's right, there is. And if we have antibiotics, we wipe everything out and we have to start all over again. That's when the battle really rages. And so it's important. The other thing is we have a very hygienic lifestyle. And so we don't carry as many bacteria probably as we used to. So it becomes even more important to replace the bacteria in our guts with friendly stuff.
So if I eat this yogurt, will I be a cultured man?
Well, at least on the inside. Doctor's orders.
Thanks, Doc. I'll eat to that.
Me too.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. What should we do about breakfast, the most important meal of the day? What have you got for us, Justin?
Breakfast.
I love breakfast.
Yeah. Today, we're going to try a healthy alternative to scrambled eggs.
Okay. I gave eggs the bad rap last night.
You did?
Yeah. Well, it's just as well you've got this recipe for us.
So what we're going to do, we've got some tofu here. We're going to fry it up in the pan, and then we're going to add all these yummy ingredients to it.
Fantastic. Well, I'll let you go ahead while I ask you some questions.
Yeah, and I know why you're going to let me do it, and that's because I'm going to take it in my bare hands like this, and I'm going to squeeze it into the pan just like this. This is kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, I actually quite enjoy this.
Yeah.
A lot of people think tofu, rubbery, tasteless, and it is rubbery, isn't it? It has a lovely texture. I quite like it.
It's a good, it's just like ricotta cheese. It has just a very subtle flavor of its own, and it takes on the flavor of whatever you put with it. So.
And do different. You know, you see tofu that's silken tofu or extra firm tofu or Morinu tofu, different things, they taste different? They all taste the same?
They all taste pretty much the same. It's the texture that's different and what are you using it for. So most of the things that I cook, I use a firm or extra firm tofu because it holds its consistency.
Yeah, and I guess when you're eating it, the texture is a little bit more chewy.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, and the beauty of it being tasteless is that you can add whatever elements to the recipe and it will just absorb those flavors.
So we need to get a little olive oil in here. Get that going.
So some olive oil.
Some olive oil. Just enough to...
Should I read the recipe while you...
Sure.
You add things. So we've put in 2 tablespoons of olive oil, crumbled our block of tofu, and now we're going to add, it says, 3 tablespoons of nutritional yeast flakes.
Now, this stuff, it is nutritional. It's got, I understand, a lot of...
B vitamins.
Yeah.
That's correct.
What are those all about, B vitamins?
Oh, B vitamins are good for stress. Well, they're essential for good health, but especially for stress. So when I'm under stress, I try and really focus on foods that have B vitamins. Rather than supplementing, it's nice to have eat your medicine,
food,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And so these have a lovely savory flavor,
the
yeast flakes.
And then we've got some turmeric here, which I think this is my favorite part of the recipe. I could probably use 4 times as much turmeric myself.
I agree. 1/8 teaspoon of turmeric. Now this gives it the a bit of color, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the ingredient that makes it look kind of like scrambled eggs.
Okay.
But it's also a bit of a superfood itself, turmeric.
It is. Now let's, I'll talk about that in a minute. 1 teaspoon of chicken style seasoning. That's got no chicken in it. I don't hear it squawking anyway.
Chicken style.
Oh, chicken style seasoning.
In the manner of chicken.
All right. So it gives it a chickeny flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is actually a beautiful flavoring. Try and get the ones that don't have the MSG, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some onion powder.
Got some onion powder here.
And could you put, I like whole onion. Could you fry onion first and then start?
The way I do it sometimes is I'll fry up some onion in the pan first, so maybe some garlic in there. Put some bell pepper, which we've got right here.
Ooh, bell pepper.
Put that in, fry that all up first, and then put the...
You're right. I think I should have read that. That was optional at the bottom, and I think I should have read that at the top.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm a bad cook. Now, we need some salt. It says 1/2 teaspoon of salt and 1/4 teaspoon of garlic powder. And there you have it. And that turmeric is
We were going to talk about that. It contains the active ingredient is curcumin, and it's a really powerful anti-inflammatory, and it's also good to fight cancer.
Okay. You know, I've also heard, you're the doctor, but this is what I've heard, that incidence of Alzheimer's are much, much lower in India than they are in the Western world because they eat so much turmeric.
That's the theory. I think that still has to be proven, but that's quite a prominent theory, and that's because it is such a powerful antioxidant. Mm. So I prescribe curcumin for my patients who have, as an anti-inflammatory.
You know what? If you would prescribe Indian food every day for me, that would be just fine. Can I get you to write me up a little prescription?
Sure, okay. Sure. I can just write curcumin, TDA. And you can add it to whichever foods you feel.
Okay. That'd be great. Okay, well, you want to have a taste?
Ooh, yeah. Here you go.
Okay.
I'm going to just, you tell me what it tastes like.
Okay.
I'm going to bow out gracefully tonight.
Okay.
But here, ooh.
It's good? It is good.
And here you can see a finished product and what you might want to serve scrambled tofu with. You know, it is, we're putting it as a breakfast food. Of course, you could have it any other time of the day. But here on the plate, we've got some toast, a fried portobello mushroom,
yes.
A little fresh tomato, and it's really nice to add some herbs. You could do cilantro in this case.
Yeah, that's really, really nice. This scrambled tofu is just great on toast. It's really delicious.
That's true. Thanks, Justin. Let's take a look at how lobbyists are on our side to protect our children.
Protecting your children from dangerous chemicals, that is the goal of a new bill that is now in front of the General Assembly. News 8's Ken Pierce has a closer look now at some of the toxic chemicals in the crosshairs of lawmakers.
Young Jack wants to stay toxic-free, but it's not easy today for kids or parents.
I pretty much poisoned my kids on a daily basis, not just with what I fed them, even though I was trying to feed them healthy, with their car seat and the baby pad.
That's because there are so many chemicals around kids today. Connecticut already banned BPA in containers for baby formula, but that is just the beginning of the list of potentially dangerous substances.
1 chloral ethyl phosphate, and 1 chloral 2 propyl phosphate. What are those? Those are TRIS. They are flame retardants that are in children's products, the children that you see here.
There are several bills going through the legislature right now designed to reduce or at least inform about levels of some of those chemicals. Proponents say the reason is simple. Cancer, autism, learning and reproductive disorders are all on the rise.
And it is consensus among the scientific community that our exposure to toxic chemicals in our products is the number one cause of the rise of these diseases.
Most of the bills we're talking about don't actually ban any chemicals. One has the state creating a list of potentially dangerous chemicals. Another has manufacturers having to put labels on their products if they contain certain chemicals. So this is less about banning stuff and more about letting you know whether the products you buy actually contain any of these substances. At the Capitol Complex in Hartford, I'm Kent Pierce, News 8.
And the more we know, the better. Now, Dr. Futrell, before the break, you were telling us a story about Regan and the amazing change that he had from being quite a severe autistic to almost imperceptibly no different from his peers. What interventions did you use?
I think you could probably put those into 4 main categories. The first thing we did was we tidied up his environment at home, made it non-toxic. The second thing was to look at his diet, and I can talk some more about that. Then we looked at his nutritional balance, and there were certainly things out in his biochemistry. And we've also looked at his gut function and tidied that up. So if I go back to diet, having taken out all the artificial stimulatory chemicals, which is very much the first step with his children, we then put him onto a gluten-free, casein-free diet. And for him, that created a very much a wow effect. He basically woke up the day after we started that, practically. Then moving on to nutrition, he had various things that were either low or high that we tested and we adjusted to get into balance, particularly zinc, copper, iron, B60-12. And then we spent a lot of time working on his gut. He had some abnormal bacteria in his gut that we managed to eliminate. We put in some more of the friendly bacteria. And so basically, they were the four core interventions that seemed to make the difference for him.
That's amazing, just those four things. But pretty holistic care, I must say, from, you know, the environment to what was going in, what he was deficient in, and then also looking at gut flora patterns. Now, Kelly, I love your book. You know, it used to be called What's Eating Your Child, which I loved that title. Now, your latest version, which is the same book essentially, is Cure Your Child with Food. And that does say it all. But in it, you call yourself the nutrition detective, and it's written like a mystery. So tell us, what are you detecting? What are you going about trying to find?
Well, I'm trying to listen to the clues the body's giving you. And I think a lot of things that parents think of as medical conditions are actually food problems or nutrition problems. And they'll tell you, oh, my child doesn't eat very well, and I don't think he feels very good. But when they go in and they have ear infections or frequent illness, they don't tie that together with their eating. And I like people to start thinking in that way, because that's the base. You know, you're not the government. You can't run on a deficit. You don't have it, you don't make it. So I want people to start thinking maybe what's going into the child is affecting their behavior, their cognition, their development, and medical issues like growth and stomach problems and reflux and all kinds of issues.
Wow. So those are things that you're talking about, some things there that normally we don't connect with what we're eating.
That's right. For example, there was a study done in the late 90s that found that almost 90% of kids that had recurring ear infections were eating something that was bothering them. And when they removed the food, the ear infections went away. And that included ear fluid, too. And that represents a lot of money and a lot of time that parents take and a lot of pain and agony of kids crying and screaming that could be 90% of the time corrected by a nutritional fix. That's a pretty high percentage.
Yes, it is. And, yeah. And we're eating three times a day. Drinking all day, so there's a huge potential for impacting those things if there is a link. So you're in the business of joining the dots for parents.
Yes, and helping them become their own detectives. Very rarely do I come up with brilliant solutions. Usually the parents know. They have a sense and an intuition, but they have to be empowered to listen to that. And that's what I was hoping to do, is give them the information so they could listen to their own instincts and believe what they're seeing and then follow through.
Brilliant. Now, Dr. Futrell, you've gained a lot of knowledge and experience from becoming a fellow of ACNAM and then the Mind Foundation and DAN, and you've learned a lot about how to treat children in an integrative way. What are the main culprits in the diet for autism and ADHD?
Certainly for ADHD, the stimulatory chemicals in the diet are very, very important. So in artificial food colours have probably got to be the worst of the bunch. And so we always remove those. Unfortunately, it's quite complicated for parents because the food colorings aren't very well labeled, and you may not be able to necessarily delineate in the USA between natural colors and artificial colors. So it's important to clean the diet up from that perspective, but there are also other stimulatory chemicals like the MSG group, like some of the preservatives. And there are certainly some very good websites out there to help parents decipher which particular types of chemicals seem to be affecting their children.
So why do they impact, or how do they impact the brain?
That's a good question. It's not really been totally worked out. Certainly some of them appear to mimic excitatory neurotransmitters. Others may even create a situation of almost self-death in some situations by if it's very high levels. So we're still working on that, and it might be to do with histamine release in some situations, but what we do know is the end point, and that removing those stimulatory chemicals for a significant proportion of children will give a notable difference.
So it's to do with stimulating the nervous system either through the immune system or directly. Now, tell me, if let's say you had 10 kids with these kind of disorders, how many might improve with the interventions that you're mentioning?
If we look at the ADHD children, because they're much more straightforward than the autistic children, in my practice, if I clean up the diet like that, I'll see probably 60-70% will have some degree of improvements. For some, it's all that they need to lose their diagnosis. Wow. The studies don't necessarily always correlate. Some show lower, some show higher rates of improvement. But of course, if you're only removing one particular sort of stimulatory food chemical and you leave in another, then you're not going to have a clear picture of what's really happening.
So it's important to be really thorough in making those changes. Well, thank you. Both Callie and Dr. Futrell still have lots to share with us. When we come back from the break, we'll have something very practical to show you. But before we do that, take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, ADHD guidelines ignored, danger lurking in East Indian foods, and ADHD, is it really on the rise? A recent survey has found that 90% of paediatric specialists do not follow the management guidelines for ADHD in under fives. 2 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics released clinical guidelines for the treatment of ADHD in preschoolers. They recommended that behavioural therapy be instituted prior to medication. And if medication is prescribed, then methylphenidate should be the drug of choice. However, more than 20% of the 3,000 specialists surveyed prescribe medication as first-line treatment, and one-third use a different medication to methylphenidate. So parents, why not try diet, lifestyle, and behavioural modifications before resorting to drugs for your preschooler? The majority of food colourings found in popular products in India either exceed the recommended safe limits or they are simply illegal. A study in India published in the Journal of Food Science analysed almost 2,500 samples of popular sweets and savouries. 5 out of every 6 samples contained colourings, 50% exceeded the safe limit, 16% contained illegal colourings, making two-thirds unsafe to eat. Children consume more of these foods than adults, and almost half the children exceeded the safe dose. So if you buy highly coloured food made in India, you might want to think twice before consuming it. ADHD is on the rise. New research published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics has found that the incidence of ADHD has increased 24% over the last decade. The rise was real, not just the result of increased awareness. Risk factors noted in the research included brain injury, preterm birth, exposure to toxins like lead and mercury, as well as alcohol and tobacco in the womb. The researchers are at a loss to explain the cause for the significant increase. The jury may be out, but the culprit could well be hiding in the pantry and the fridge. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Now, sports drinks are all the rage. So Callie thought it would be great if we could make you a sports drink. Callie, why did you think this was a good thing to do?
Well, the Centers of Disease Control just came out with some statistics, and they found that the average 6 to 11-year-old has 12 ounces of sugary drink every day. That doesn't include 100% fruit juice or even sugared milks like the flavored milks. That's a lot of sweet calories, and that contributes to obesity and poor diet quality.
Right.
So we want to show you what's in it besides
sugar and water.
Just sugar and water, right.
So we'll start with this jug of water, and I think there's some liquid some liquid sugar in there.
That's
so
right.
We'll pour in some liquid sugar, but then I think you also need to add some glucose and fructose. So,
I think if you want to see how much sugar it would be, this is a quart, right? And this is about how much sugar plus liquid sugar that's going to be in that.
That's exactly right.
A lot of sugar. That's more the sugar than you probably want to eat in a day.
Yes, it is. It's no wonder we've got a problem of
obesity. That's right.
And type 2 diabetes in our younger population.
Right, that's right.
Now we need to add some citric acid because that's going to be a bit of, I guess,
bite.
A tang, a little bite, but that's not going to be the best thing for our teeth. We need to add some of those unknown natural and artificial flavors. And, of course, in the United States, we actually don't know what those are, but we know they go in there.
Some of them are proprietary, so they're trade secrets.
Oh, I see. So it can't be told. It's actually...
And actually, I'm going to hide some extra who knows what this is.
Oh, that's the... Okay.
Because that's the way it really is. As a matter of fact, there was an ingredient that was just removed.
There was? What was that?
Brominated vegetable oil. And a lot of sports drinks contain this. It was used to stabilize the citric acid. And for 4 decades, they were waiting for research to see if it was truly safe. They thought it was probably safe, but they were waiting. Interim research
never got it. So
it was
probably sitting in that long list of EFIS foods.
They had more important things to do. Yes.
Oh.
So throw some of that in, although that's being removed now.
It's being removed now.
But who knows what else could be in there.
We've been drinking it for 40 years.
That's right.
That's a bit scary. Now, it's a sports drink, so we are going to have to add a little bit of salt because it's supposedly good for you if you're going to be dehydrated.
But there's not much. It's about a pinch.
Just a pinch.
Yeah.
But do we really need that if we're just out in the playground playing?
Absolutely not.
No?
You'd have to run a marathon before you'd need that. And this chicken nuggets and the other food you're eating would have plenty of it.
Oh, hopefully we're not doing that. Okay, let's add some sodium citrate.
All right.
And then there's something called monopotassium phosphate. Then we need to put some of that in. Now, you remember I've talked about sodas before, and that phosphate is actually not good for our bones because it starts to leach calcium out. But
and they can actually measure the calcium coming out of the bones of teenage girls after they drink soda. They can measure the calcium in the urine.
Wow.
Thank you for that ingredient because that's what does that.
Yes. And then there's this stuff called glycerol ester of rosin, which we've put some oils, especially the flavorings will be oils, and we've got to mix that together because oil will float on top of water, so we've got to add that. It's said to come from the pine tree, so it's thought to be safe, but it's generally regarded as safe, so it's in that grass.
It's an emulsifier.
Yes, it's an emulsifier. And then, that's right, emulsifier. And we've got to add the color because...
Oh, yeah, we need a lot of color.
Yeah, we need color.
Because,
so,
yeah, the sports drinks are nice and bright, as you can see.
That's
here.
Right. So we need to top that right to the top with color, actually. Mm-hmm. Because color is important to keep these looking so attractive. Now, does that look attractive to you? Is that something that you'd really want to drink?
I might want to decorate my living room with that, but I'm not sure I want to decorate my insides with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think I would be sticking to water.
I agree.
And what might we do if our children don't particularly want to drink water and they've been used to drinking this toxic stuff? What might we do to just flavor it nicely?
We could cut up a lemon or a lime slice and put that in. Recently, people are using cucumbers as a flavor enhancer. Keep it cold, perhaps.
Yes, and that's a great rehydrator, also cucumber.
Right. But that's one ingredient. You'll notice all these other drinks have, this has 30 ingredients in it?
30 ingredients.
10 ingredients.
Yes, that's a sports drink.
24, 21.
17, 23. And 16. And that's really frightening that you could get, I mean, here's the worst culprit down here, 30 ingredients from just drinking one can.
I can't think of 30 things to put in.
No, and that excludes the water. I didn't cheat by including water in those numbers. So this is great. This really has no ingredients.
And to make universal rehydration formula, which is what they give people when they have diarrhea illness, and that's some of the reason they push these things, it's just water with a couple spoonfuls of sugar and a pinch of salt. That's all. All the rest of this, are flavor enhancers and stabilizers and chemicals and things that aren't good for you, that your kidneys and your liver have to detoxify.
Right. And they've got enough detoxifying to do with living. The environment and just with living. Well, thanks, Kelly.
My pleasure.
Now, before I answer your questions, let's learn about another ageless advantage.
Do you have high blood pressure? A little careful menu planning can help. A 2007 health professional study found that hypertension was almost 25% less likely among people eating at least 4 servings daily of whole grain foods. If you plan oatmeal for breakfast, a whole wheat sandwich for lunch, brown rice with dinner, and snack on popcorn, you've easily enjoyed your 4 servings. Adding whole grains to your menu plan is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now I'm going to answer some questions you've texted, called, or posted on our Facebook page. Gloria posted on Facebook, "Every program so far has been a winner and I'm sharing lots of information with family and friends and colleagues. I just love you guys." Thanks, Gloria. And Evadne posted on Facebook, "I watch your show every day I get the chance. I've had a problem. I have breast cancer and had a mastectomy in December, but my doctors want me now to have chemotherapy. Can you help me strengthen my immune system for chemo?" Well, I would encourage you to use the New Start program. That is, N is for nutrition. I encourage a low-fat diet, no sugar, plenty of fruit and vegetables, and if you can afford it, have a veggie juice every day. You would want to be juicing carrots, perhaps a quarter of a beet, green leafy veggies in abundance, and then if you're cooking food, have whole grains cooked, but lots of raw things. For exercise, you really need to empower your immune system by walking briskly for 45 minutes every day. If you want to run, that's fine, but I realize you're just getting over surgery, but walking will be just as good. W stands for water. Drink 2 liters or 8 glasses a day, and externally, water therapy can be really helpful as well if you can get hydrotherapy. The S is for sunshine. Try to get as much sun as possible without burning. You'll become tanned, and that is good because that's going to give you lots of vitamin D, and also just boost your immune system plenty. The T is for temperance. That means nothing bad and all the good things in moderation. So, no caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, sugar, and moderation in the good things that you know you can get. A is for air. So exercise outdoors, preferably near trees or running water where there's lots of negative ions that are going to be good for your health, or with crashing waves. Sleep with the windows open. It's really important to get that fresh air through the night because that's about 8 hours of your day. And if it's safe to do so, or put a bolt on your window so that you can keep it open and get that fresh air. Deep breathing is really important. When you remember to do it, deep breathe. The R is for rest. 9 hours of sleep every night. Be asleep before 10 p.m. and have a day of rest every week. You know, God designed us to work for 6 and rest on the 7th. So only 6 days for work and 1 for rest. Trust is the T, and that means trust or religiosity. And, you know, it's a measure of religious belief, practice and experience. And what the research shows us is that people that have religiosity have less illness, quicker recovery, fewer complications, and they have more resilience. You'll be needing all of those things to go through what's ahead of you, and be sure to make your peace with God and draw close to Him. You know, Psalm 23 says, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." And there are 4,000 more promises just like that in the Bible. Thanks for sending those questions. Call us with your question on child behavior and diet. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. And remember, you can also text us or post your questions on our Facebook page. Now, in a moment, we'll be back with our guests to learn more about child behavior and diet. But first, let's head down to the supermarket. Modern beetroots are derived from wild sea beets that originated around the coasts of Europe, Middle East, and Africa. They're available all year round, so it's easy to find them fresh. Choose fresh, bright, firm textured roots. The top greens should be used while they're fresh. Chop them finely and steam them on their own or with your favorite greens. The root can be kept in the fridge for weeks. They're a wonderful source of iron and nitrate. They boost the immune system and guard against cancer. Beets can be grated and eaten raw, or you can boil, steam, roast, or sauté them. Raw, they're great for juicing, and recent research shows that the juice can bring down high blood pressure. Bon appetit. Kelly, tell us, does sugar impact children's brains and their behaviours?
It does appear to do so. It's hard to do these kind of studies because you're not going to take a bunch of kids and fill them full of sugar and see if they stop reading. But they did do a number of studies in the 80s where they went into institutions where kids were in juvenile detention facilities, and they took the sugar out of the diet. And for the most part, in over 1,000 kids this was looked at, the juvenile incidence where they had to do corrective behaviors and punishments went down 50%. Just taking sugar out and doing nothing else. And of course, this is a captive audience, and so they could control the diet very well. But of course, kids at higher risk who are irritable and have some brain chemical changes, they are going to be more sensitive to the intake of sugar and other irritants like the artificial colors you were talking about.
Right. Now, that would make many parents think, well, we'll just use artificial sweeteners. What do you think about doing that?
No, that's not a good idea either, because some of those, as the good doctor was just talking about, are excitotoxins, are very agitating to the system. And most of them in this country are not approved or not recommended for children. And so I don't even know if they're really recommended for adults either, but they allow them in adults, but nobody's suggesting that kids should have them.
Really? And yet they're put into many of children's drinks, the soft drinks, the energy drinks, and all that.
They're put in a lot of things that adults drink that they give to their children, like diet, fill in the blank. But I don't think they were ever meant for children. They kind of are slipping through to the side. They won't have a kid's drink that's labeled as a child's drink with those substances because they're not really allowed or recommended.
Right. Thank you. Now, Dr. Futrell, phenols are naturally present in some foods, and some kids are sensitive to them. Where do we find the phenols, and how do you tell if your child is affected?
Okay. Phenols are a group of food chemicals that are present in predominantly very brightly coloured, flavourful fruits. So things like berries, oranges, apples, grapes. And so, you know, they're obviously very healthy foods, but for some children, they're unable to detoxify the phenolic components of those foods. Artificial food colours also have a phenol group on them as well, and tend to also really affect this particular pathway that's not working very well in some children. So the signs that you tend to see in a child who is phenol sensitive, and I would say around 80-90% of children with autism are, and somewhere around 70-80% in my practice anyway of children with ADHD are that they can sort of blow out if they have an excess of phenols, which is over their particular threshold. And the complicated thing here is that, of course, it could be a combination of foods that contribute to that overload. So a child may appear to be able to tolerate a couple of oranges one day, but the next day if they have that, and they've also had some berries or some apples, etc., then they go over their limit. When they go over their limit, what you tend to see is that some sort of behaviour. They can become teary, irrational, aggressive, anything that you particularly wouldn't want to have. And also characteristically, they may often develop a rim of red around the outside of their ear or cheek. And you sort of have to look for it. It's not always that obvious unless you're looking. So it can be complicated for parents to work out what's happening here because of the apparent variability, but once they understand the whole group of foods that can contribute to a phenol overload, then they can keep the child below the threshold and should see a change in behaviour.
Now, do children grow out of that phenol sensitivity, or do they have that as a lifelong thing?
It is a lifelong sensitivity, but it's less significant in adulthood, just because of the size issue predominantly, I think, and the increased ability to clear. But it may give slightly different symptoms in adulthood, maybe more fatigue rather than hyperactivity, headaches, flushing. So, it becomes a slightly different presentation and less prevalent.
Thank you. Now, Kelly, we're getting into the area of food additives. You know, we've talked about colourings and perhaps artificial sweeteners and things. Do food additives generally and flavourings have an impact on child health?
they can have an impact. Some children are quite resistant to it and can handle it. And I think the reason that the studies have been somewhat controversial, at least in this country, is because there's a small subgroup of children who are affected. And if you have one of those children, of course, you have a problem. And the kids who are most affected have learning problems, behavior problems, and attention problems. So those are the populations we should be concentrating on. They're the most likely to be irritated or affected by these chemicals. They have to be detoxified through your body just the way drugs do. And some people are very good at that, as Dr. Futrell was talking about, and some kids are not very good at that.
And their detoxification mechanisms become overwhelmed
and cause them
easily.
Irritability. Right.
Now, in the United States, I read labels, but I struggle here because it just says flavorings, artificial and natural flavorings.
Right.
How is there any way you can find out what is in your products or not?
Well, artificial flavor colors do have to be labeled. They have a certain number that have been approved, and they are labeled clearly. And, of course, if it glows in the dark, it probably has an artificial color in it. But some of the other things, the other chemicals, can be hidden in proprietary ingredients or flavors, as you say. So that's more difficult. But the artificial ones, thankfully, do have to be labeled.
Okay. Thank you. Now, Dr. Futrell, you mentioned when you were telling Regan's story, you mentioned that you had to clean up his gut. And gut flora does play a role in immune function, digestion, and nutrient absorption. And I think it's, about 70% of our neurotransmitters are also involved in digestion. So how do you clean up the gut? How do you test for it and see if it's contributing to the problem?
Well, we send samples of stool around the world to specialist labs who will analyze for us a whole range of bacteria, parasites, fungi, both looking for what's there that shouldn't be there, but also analyzing what's missing. And we get a very clear picture from that as to what's happening within the child's gut, and then we can use targeted interventions to eliminate the baddies and put in some more of the friendly bacteria.
So what might treatment involve, just briefly?
Okay. Well, depending on what you find, you may use antibiotics, a herb, something that you've tested or the lab has tested to know will actually reduce the pathogen. And then we'll also put in probiotics and prebiotics to help encourage the growth of friendly bacteria and encourage a healthier gut wall lining.
Great. Well, Callie and Dr. Futrell still have lots to share, so don't go away. Go healthy for good. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back. Now, don't forget to call us with your question on 855-400-HEALTHY. Now, let's take a look at this video from the Breast Cancer Fund about a source of contaminants in babies' food. It's really scary.
The Breast Cancer Fund tested popular canned food items marketed to kids and found that every single one contained BPA. The highest levels were found in Campbell's Disney Princess and Campbell's Toy Story soups. BPA is a chemical found in the lining of food cans. It migrates, though, from the can into the food so that when we eat the food, it gets into our bodies. BPA is considered an endocrine disrupting chemical because of its effects on the body's hormone systems. Laboratory studies raise concerns that BPA might cause breast cancer, as well as prostate cancer, infertility, early puberty in girls, obesity, diabetes, and ADHD. Exposure to BPA in childhood is of particular concern. Growing kids aren't just little adults. They actually consume more food per pound of body weight, and their body systems are developing rapidly and much more vulnerable to the effects of hormones and hormone-like substances such as BPA than adults.
And if kids are more vulnerable, then the onus is on us to protect them. Callie, that was information about linings of cans, but you know that preservatives are often put into foods that are not canned. And do preservatives also have an impact on health?
They can, but there are some very good preservatives. Salt, for example, is the classic preservative, and I think there are safe things you can do to preserve food, and we need to preserve food through the winter so we have a safe source of healthy nutrition. I'm very happy that we can get greens in the wintertime now. I think a simple rule of thumb so people don't feel overwhelmed is read the label, and if you don't recognize the ingredients, don't buy it.
And an easy way to preserve is freezing, or even just simple dehydration.
And now they're doing pickling. You know, pickling's having a comeback now. We used to pickle where I grew up, and everything was pickled, and now they're doing that again. So there are, and that adds good probiotics that Dr. Fortrell was talking about also to the food. So there are good ways to preserve, but we have to be careful with how we do that.
Thank you. Now, Dr. Futrell, there's clear research regarding food colorings, and you mentioned these before. What does the evidence tell us?
Well, if you look at the slide, this is a study that compares 15 different studies looking at the effect of food coloring, and you can see there's a linear correlation, i.e. the more food dye that children receive, the more likely they are to misbehave or be inattentive. And the summary finding from this particular meta-analysis was that they felt that the benefit of removing artificial food colouring for children with ADHD was probably somewhere in the realms of a third to a half the benefit of giving a stimulant medication. Obviously, that's on average. So for some children, removing artificial food colours will actually prevent the need to use a stimulant medication. For others, it may not be enough. There's other factors as well. And there's also been some interesting work that's come out of the UK with Prof Stevenson in The Lancet. Just giving combinations of food colours to children in normal primary schools at the age of 3 and somewhere around 8 or 9. And what he showed was that it's not only those children that we consider to be vulnerable or hyperactive who seem to have a negative effect from having food colours, but it has a global effect on all types of children. Not all of them are affected, but children who previously may not be seen to be hyperactive can then become more irritable or less able to attend in class if they're receiving this sort of food in their diet.
That's a worry then, isn't it, that even children that we perceive to be normal when they receive the food colourings are becoming hyperactive. That's pretty scary.
Subtle. So it's an enormous brain drain that's happening. It's a huge experiment that we don't really know the answer to at this stage.
Yes, it's not a very pleasant thought thinking about experimenting on our children. But, you know, Callie, there is a page on the FDA website called EAFUS, E-A-F-U-S, Everything Added to Food in the US. There are over 3,000 substances on that list. Some of them I couldn't even pronounce. And next to it, there is a classification of how well studied these are, whether there's been research at all. Some of them are now even banned. What do you advise parents around these kind of things?
I think that you have to simplify. The farmers market movement in this country, I think, is coming from that place. It's a one ingredient thing. Here's a cucumber, we know what's in that, although there might be pesticides or some other things that at least we're starting with that. And some of the pesticides aren't even in the food they're in, or the preservatives are in the packaging, and some of those things aren't even listed. So I think you want to keep things as simple as you can. One ingredient snacks, an apple, you know, a banana or some things that are simple like that. We want to help parents not to feel overwhelmed, because when you hear stuff like that, people start thinking, well, I just may as well forget about it. It's just too much to do. But there are things you can do. You can vote with your dollars. You vote, well, every time you buy something that's healthy, they produce more healthy stuff. That's why Walmart now has organic food, because people wanted organic food. And so don't throw away your power over this. Don't throw up your hands in distress. There's a lot you can do.
Thank you. That's really encouraging. Now, Dr. Futrell, we just raised the topic of pesticides and herbicides, etc., that can impact health. How can we limit or avoid ingesting those?
Well, luckily there's some good information out there, particularly by the Environmental Working Group, showing which fruits and vegetables tend to have the most levels of pesticides within them and which should tend to be more on the clean side. So, for instance, things like berries, apples, potatoes tend to be the more pesticide-laden foods, whereas pineapples or avocados are often really pretty clean. So, obviously, the Council of Perfection is to be completely organic, but that's rather expensive for many families. But if you can choose organic just out of the top 10 most laden foods, then you're going to make a big difference. Around 80% of your intake will be decreased.
That's perfect advice. So even if we can't afford a totally organic diet, go onto that website at ewg.org, I think it is, and they've got the Dirty Dozen and then the Clean 15. And then you can say, okay, the Dirty Dozen, if I eat those, I'm going to try and get those organic or just avoid eating them and go for the Clean 15. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Debbie and Callie, so much. Our time has run out. It's been great having you on the show. And I just want to remind people that reading labels is important. And here are the rules in our family. If God made it, eat it. If man made it, read it. And if you can't read it, don't eat it. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.